I want to tell you a story now that at first glance really doesn't have a lot to do with Beethoven, but there is a connection, if you'll bear with me. I don't know how many people in this audience know who Charles Lindbergh was. He was the first pilot to fly across the Atlantic from New York to Paris. And he accomplished this in the early 1920s, shortly after World War I. It was something that was considered an impossible thing to do, and there were some people who tried to do it and lost their lives trying. But Charles Lindbergh was a very young pilot. He was flying the mail routes. And when he came up with his idea of how to get across the Atlantic and what kind of a plane he needed and found some backers, his plans were published in the newspapers, and the newspapers nicknamed him. They gave him the nickname, the Flying Fool. Well, he went out to California and had his plane made, the Spirit of St. Louis. And when he flew it nonstop from California to St. Louis, the newspapers nicknamed him again. This time they called him Lucky Lindy. And when he made the trip, flew all the way from New York to Paris, he became, in newspaper parlance, the Lone Eagle. I love that story because through all of those different names, Charles Lindbergh remained the same, his plans remained the same. The only thing that changed was how he was perceived. And I don't think we need to throw away that first nickname, the Flying Fool, because that may be the most important one. Because if you want to do anything important or anything that really matters to you, you may have some time where it looks pretty foolish to the outside world. What could be more foolish than a deaf musician continuing to compose? When Beethoven found out he was going to be deaf and there wasn't anything he could do about it, he wrote in his journal, "For me, this life is poisoned forever." How can someone who can't hear what they're writing to continue to write? We have some clues. In the first place, Beethoven probably had perfect pitch. That is, he knew from hearing a note whether it was an A or an E or a G flat or whatever. So he had perfect pitch, and the amazing thing though is that he managed to remember those notes over a period of about 15 years to keep them in mind. Any musician who goes deaf is not like a painter, for instance, who goes blind. Any musician, even a mediocre musician, can look at a piece of music and know what it sounds like. You can hear it in your mind's ear. So he had that. And then there was his compositional process. He would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he would start singing loudly, and waving his arms and stomping his feet. He was trying to get some sort of vibration or feel inside his body for what he was doing. But it made him look foolish. Servants laughed at him behind his back. People made fun of him. And whenever he carried on like that out in the country, people working in the fields were afraid of him. They thought he was a lunatic. He left dozens and dozens of sketchbooks, which is where he would write down his musical ideas and work on them. And the sketchbooks are a monument to industry and struggle, because he tried things out and turned them this way and that and polished and reconfigured. Just an incredible amount of work went into everything that he did. And in the process, he created the 9 symphonies, which have been the backbone of orchestral concert seasons for the last 200 years. The 32 piano sonatas, which are sort of the New Testament of the pianist's Bible, and the string quartets, which are a cornerstone of string quartet literature. But I'd like to put forth the idea that while he was doing all this, he didn't know that that would be the end result. He didn't know people would accept his music and remember it. All he knew about was putting one foot ahead of the other, doing the best he could every day, and believing that his efforts were worthwhile. Whenever he decided to go forward, he wrote, "I will seize fate by the throat. It shall not crush me completely." This was his answer to being powerless in the face of his handicap. And I would like to leave you with a quote. These are not my words. They belong to an mystery writer called T. Jefferson Parker. And he said, "Powerlessness is not a reason to do something so simple-minded as surrender. No. The acts of the powerless are among the lasting nobilities of the race."